The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Dr. Morgan McMonagall is with me in studio, a vascular trauma surgeon who is just back from the Nasser Hospital in Gaza. Morgan, thanks a million for joining us.
Not at all, thank you.
How long have you been back?
Just over a week. I got back Thursday afternoon a week ago, so maybe 10 days.
And how long are you back for? Are you going back again?
That's a million-dollar question. It's unlikely. It's unlikely I would get back in.
Okay. We might get to that then in just a moment. So how long were you there for, this stint?
6 weeks. 6 weeks total.
And talk to me about the experience.
Well, I was only meant to be there for four. The first 4 weeks, the ceasefire was still in operation. Although during the ceasefire, the first 4 weeks, there were still plenty of drones flying over, still plenty of F-16s and a few shootings, but there was no blast going on. But during the time, the forces that control what gets in and what gets out stopped aid getting in. So food and medicine started to drop off, and then electricity was cut to the main water desalination plant. So while it wasn't anything like it was a year ago, because I was there a year ago in a field hospital, things were starting to get tough again while people were trying to rebuild their lives. As they were, over 1.5 million people migrated internally, displaced from the north to the south, and they were starting to go back to rebuild their lives again to, houses that were structurally unsound. We had a few incidences of people being injured and kids being injured from walls falling down because people had to live somewhere.
Yeah.
And then the ceasefire was breached on the early hours of March 18th.
And was there a sense there that this was coming?
I would say, speaking with the locals, they felt it was a case of when rather than if. Obviously, they were hopeful. But the reduction in aid coming in and the fact that people were not allowed get materials to fix things, fix machines, fix electricity, fix pipes, fix sewage. There was a feeling on the ground that the structural damage, it was going to remain for a reason.
And the few weeks up until the ceasefire was breached, how different was your experience this time compared? Because you were in here as well, having come back the last time from Gaza, and that more field hospital experience. And you talked about, the difficulty of that working environment and the reality of what you were dealing with. How different were these few weeks where there was, relative with a big capital R kind of normality?
Look, it was different because a year ago I was in a field hospital. So it was a temporary hospital in a field, essentially. And we couldn't leave. When I arrived, the night I arrived in 2024 was the night that Nasser Hospital was being sieged. And we received some of the trauma patients from Nasser Hospital to our field hospital for ongoing treatment. So almost a year to the day, I was back in the same hospital that was being sieged. But, markets were starting to come back. People were starting to rebuild their lives. The World Food Programme was working with a lot of bakeries to bring them flour and reset up businesses. But housing was still an issue. People were still living in tents. The last 2 weeks of February, even though it's a desert climate, it was very, very cold. It got down to 0 degrees some nights. People had very inadequate shelter. And we certainly treated some children for hypothermia and cold-related illnesses. But we were still hopeful. And, the standard of care in the hospitals is still very, very good, despite the fact that it's now an austere environment. People were doing their very best. And everybody hoped that it would continue. And there was plans to bring more and more teams in. I was closer to Rafah last year, which is the southern city in Gaza, and Rafah hadn't been invaded at that time. But since then, I think Rafah was invaded in June 2024 and it was very badly destroyed. We had the opportunity to go and visit Gaza City. Gaza City was extremely badly destroyed. Very few buildings left standing. Raw sewage on the streets. No public garbage system. Rubbish was being left on the streets and then burned to try and take care of it. Mosques were bombed. But we're starting to get some food back in. And then it was breached on March 18th. So suddenly we were dropped straight back into the depths of a conflict zone.
And how quickly did that manifest in the hospital?
Oh, immediately. I mean, it's the single worst night since the conflict started in October 2024. 2023. I think it was the single worst night. And it started just shortly after 2 a.m. Within about 30, 40 minutes, we had a mass casualty event with people arriving by ambulance, cars, donkey and cart, carried in by hand. A lot of dead people, a lot of dead children. We, you know, spent the first 20 minutes pronouncing people dead, mostly kids and women. Roughly 50% of the Gazan population is under the age of 14. So when you see that number of children being brought in at once dead or severely injured, who some went on to die later, it's quite shocking to see that any conflict would allow that to happen. And any world, any modern world that's civilized would allow that to happen. So we started operating from about 3 a.m. till, you know, operated right through until maybe 10 p.m. at night.
Yeah.
Mostly kids. Certainly the average age was, you know, probably between 8 and 14.
And the nature of the injuries or the cause of death, is it predominantly direct hits? Is it shrapnel? Is it debris?
Yeah.
What does it happen
it's
to
shrapnel.
Be?
It's almost all shrapnel that gets brought in. If you get a direct hit, your body parts. And in fact, you know, most of anyone who gets hit by a direct hit from a military grade weapon is generally either vaporized if it's an absolute direct hit, or if you're very close to the vicinity, it's body parts, unfortunately.
Okay.
And you have to remember that certainly in Cairn Unis, where Nasser Hospital is, most of the explosions that night were in what's been designated a humanitarian zone. And most people are living in tents, very densely populated in tents, which offer no protection whatsoever from shrapnel. So if you're outside the immediate blast epicenter, then you're looking at shrapnel injuries.
Mm.
And so you've got hundreds of thousands of pieces of sharp metal flying at a very, very high velocity. And it's unlike, say, a bullet wound, which will generally hit one part of the body, shrapnel affects everything: head, brain, chest, abdomen, pelvis. And that's what kills you. Shrapnel is absolutely deadly. And in fact, there's a general rule of thumb that if an explosion goes off close to a building, that you try and put yourself at least two walls between yourself and the explosion outside. So tents offer no protection whatsoever.
Mm. And the shortage then of supplies, or the complete lack of supplies once aid was halted as well, how quickly did that become a very real problem for ye?
Yeah, it was already starting to be a problem because, you know, in the ceasefire window, which I think lasted maybe 6 weeks, 8 weeks, a lot of the NGOs and hospitals stockpiled. And then when food and supplies started falling off, you could see, because you're trying to get your hospital back up to speed, and you have a lot of patients coming in what I describe as neglected surgical disease. So cancers that have been missed are now presenting quite advanced and they need surgery. So the hospital was doing quite a lot of elective or semi-elective work to try and manage those conditions. So you're going through supplies in a normal way. But then when the supply chain reduced or was shut off, they couldn't be replenished. So you might end up using something like sterile surgical gowns that a surgeon would normally wear. You use those to drape a patient as well, because they can be recycled and re-sterilized. So you're all the time trying to work a little bit smarter than normal, a little bit differently. You're trying to have a plan B. But mechanical things, screws, wires, you know, springs, things for fixing electronic equipment or electrical equipment was not available. So, for example, when you have an injured patient, you always give them fluids that are warmed. We were warming our fluids in the microwave. The microwave broke, so we were forced to either give cold fluids or none at all. So it's little things like that were making a big difference to outcomes. And then once the ceasefire was breached, we were dealing with a mass casualty on the first night. And then every night after that, we were dealing with what I would call a mini mass casualty, not quite the same numbers, but still the hospital was still, we were still working till 3-4 every night in the morning, doing surgery. And sometimes the right equipment wasn't always available.
And tell me then how close, because we played a little clip earlier of you talking about, you know, sheltering in the lower floors of the hospital.
Yeah.
So tell me about the hospital being hit.
Well, that was a Sunday, March 23rd. It was about, I think it was about 9:30 or 10 in the evening. We were actually on the fourth floor, which is the top floor of the hospital where we lived, and our operating rooms and our intensive care unit all on the same floor. The hospital was hit on the second floor in the male surgical ward. We were actually in the intensive care unit looking at myself and an American colleague at two patients we had who were still bleeding, and we were debating which one was more urgent to bring back to the operating room. And then, you know, the entire building shook, loud explosion. I thought it was an explosion outside, like close but remote from the hospital. Mm. And then within about 2 or 3 minutes, our security said, no, the hospital's been hit. It was on the second floor. It was a targeted hit. There was a 16-year-old boy killed alongside. It's a miracle more people were not injured or killed. And after about 20, 40 minutes, we got word that the hospital was not a target per se. And then we got on with our job. We went back to the operating room and operated until about 2 a.m.
And sorry, these maybe seem naive questions to somebody who's been there, but when you say a targeted hit on the second floor of the hospital, I mean, to a four-floor hospital, in my naivete, I would have thought kind of floors 3 and 4 above it are collateral damage. Yep. Are they, or is the IDF that advanced
I don't know what was used. All I can say is that the male floor that was struck, and I believe it was a drone, from what I've been told, that ward's out of action. So it's structurally damaged.
Yeah.
It can't be used, rubble everywhere. The floors above and below. The ED, the emergency department, was 2 floors below on the ground floor directly. It was still in use. We had to use something. So we kept going. Yeah.
And I mean, when you describe people not getting the intervention they need because of, you know, small things, like not being able to heat fluids or there's certain screws or springs, and it might be, I mean, what's more difficult? What's more difficult? Like the obvious trauma of these shrapnel injuries and children being brought in and the condition that you've seen them now on so many occasions, or is it the frustration of being able to help somebody but you can't because of something as minor as a couple of screws not being available?
Look, it's both. One is obviously a very shocking event. You get on and do the best job you can, and then you may recalibrate and assimilate what happened later. The frustration, it's like doing anything. It's like doing anything at home, trying to fix something with the wrong tool. It's just frustrating. It's irritating. I wouldn't say anybody went without treatment because of a lack of tools, but certainly it was way more difficult to manage conditions that you know you could normally manage better in a Western healthcare system, or if they were able to get supplies in. Because actually the standard of care in Gaza and the standard of medical knowledge is actually very high.
How jarring is it to fly back to a society like this one after being in Gaza?
It's going back to normality. It's trying to put yourself back in your normal job and pay normal bills and have normal.
Is it easy to do that though?
I wouldn't say it's easy. It's people react in different ways, and you have to have a certain level of grit to do a job like this. I would say I carried a lot of guilt. I felt quite guilty leaving patients behind, patients I worked on, patients I would have liked to have seen through. You feel guilty when those patients get a really severe complication and die. And I felt a lot of guilt with comrades who were there, you know, because there's huge camaraderie when you have a shared experience. And they're still in the thick of it. I'm still in contact, you know, maybe every second day with them. And they report to me things are getting worse on a daily basis. In fact, I think only a few hours ago, there was some journalists killed in a tented complex, literally 200 meters from the hospital, as an example. And the paramedics who were killed, 8 or 9 paramedics who were attacked, their bodies were brought to the hospital as well. So it's those little shared experiences when you know what's going on, when you know you'd like to be able to give more help. But to be honest, it's a political problem with a political solution.
Why do you think you wouldn't get back into the country?
It's very controlled. A lot of my colleagues who I've worked with have not or refuse entry. You only find out the night before if you're on a list to allow you in, and similar to get out if you're on a list. And just many colleagues have been refused. I've no idea if this is just purely probability, but most of those refused seem to be on their third attempt to get in. That's just an observation.
Okay. Well, Morgan, thanks a million for coming in to us.
Thank you.
Dr. Morgan McMonagall, the vascular trauma surgeon, just back from Nasser Hospital in Khan Yunis in Gaza.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.